man, all muscles bulging through his mail shirt. He was armed with an axe that could have decapitated a centaur in a single strike.
"Here we go. I hope I don't scream that much while I'm dying."
At least that way, his friends back at Elytra would have something nice to say about his passing.
If they ever find out.
Along came many screeching noises, followed by chattering steps from somewhere past Alder's range of vision. One of the cultists was the first to react to the noise. A scream died in his throat because a thick strand of web violently glued his head to the wall. He flailed in mad desperation and began suffocating. A group of three horned spider warriors clashed against the cultists before they had time to react. Black chitin flashed against red capes, and screams echoed through the stone walls. Alder couldn't distinguish screams of rage from screams of pain or fear. It all sounded the same to him. A woman tried to lift a rune, then mandibles opened and closed in her direction, and rune and hand and arm all disappeared in a mist of blood and torn skin. Another cultist collapsed under the weight of the other two spiders, and he screamed and screamed as the poisoned fangs turned his face to shreds. Alder watched it all, paralyzed by horror and disgust.
"At least they're winning,"
he found himself thinking, and immediately felt nauseated and disgusted with himself. Scarlet red marred the walls and the tapestry. Then the leader of the cultists, that huge, muscled man, reached the melee. His axe smashed against a horned spider. The weapon tore through chitin and muscle in a shower of gore. In an instant, what had been a living, furious spider had turned into two separate, barely recognizable chunks of blue ichor, gray meat, and twitching black legs. Without stopping, the man dropped his axe and reached for the nearest spider, who tried to eat his hand away like it had done with the spellcaster an instant ago. Instead, the man caught the mandibles, then pulled away, muscles rippling like steel cords through his neck and back. There was a sickening explosion, followed by a wet impact as innards fell on the ground. Alder turned away and ran for the haunt's exit. He stumbled against the tables of the mess hall, now abandoned, still filled with forgotten food. The box of potions clattered in his grip, threatened to fall over. He managed to hold on despite the fear. He couldn't even remember what he was supposed to do with it, and his only desire was to get away from that man and those terrible hands. Had someone seen him run away? The bard found a crumpled shape at the end of the tunnel out of the mess hall. A woman with her back against the wall and a small puddle of blood expanding under her.
Kess!
The mercenary was covered in blood. Her eyes were closed, but she was nursing a long gash on her abdomen, a nasty-looking wound that had split open her armor like it was nothing. Alder ran to her. About 5 strides away from the mercenary, he saw a cloud of dust extending past the end of the tunnel. Kess raised what little remained of her shield and threw herself prone, covering her head as well as she could. Then she noticed his presence and stared at him in horror. She screamed at him to get down.
"What are you?"
A wave of heat and noise smashed against him, too fast for him to be confused about it. The box was torn from his hands, and his feet left the ground. He smashed against the hard ground, deafening, overwhelming silence extending around him, and then darkness. The wraith stood above a ring of dead vegetation, a cloud of smoke rising around him, its gleaming green eyes fixed on a woman clad in leather armor standing at the tip of a jagged outcrop overlooking the valley.
"Catalin!" Ed realized.
There was no mistaking her. Who else would be crazy enough to try and solo the wraith? The undead swooped like a bird of prey toward the thief, who reacted instantly by jumping down the slope. Ed stared, frozen, sure that he had just seen Catalin commit suicide. Instead of slipping and rolling all the way down, Catalin jumped and darted and vaulted like an Olympic gymnast as the wraith roared above her. Catalin reached the valley, jumped past a boulder, and ran for her life.
"Over here!"
Ed called. The thief saw him and headed his way. The wraith saw her, then headed Ed's way too.
"Well, here we go," said Kaga.
He drank a dirty-looking potion from a clear flask hidden in his armor.
"What's the plan?"
Ed took out Levy's rune from his belt, took aim above Catalin's head, and opened fire. The witch spray projectiles left purple lines of light in their passing.
Direct hit!
But instead of smashing against the wraith, the magical orbs flickered and died a few feet away from the undead, like an invisible god had snuffed them out with his fingertips.
Well, fuck, Ed thought.
The creature's aura was strong enough to resist magical attacks. They couldn't bypass it. They couldn't even get close to it without going mad with fear.
Ed, run!
Catalan exclaimed, gesturing back at the trees where Ed and his group had come from.
We can't touch the bastard!
Spectres are that way, Ed told her.
Oh, come on!
Above her, the wraith extended its arms toward its daughter. A cold, calculating part of Ed's mind knew that if Torst reached her and drained her, it had become a sentient wraith, and then there'd be no way to stop it. A wraith with human intelligence surely would be smart enough to realize it could easily dive underground and hunt them that way.
Fuck it.
He activated his improved reflexes. At once, the world slowed down. He could see the flight path of the wraith crossing the air as if it were honey, greedy pinpricks of green light fixated upon Catalan's head.
Let's see.
He couldn't hurt the wraith. He couldn't get anywhere near it. He couldn't even use his drones. They'd die instantly from the aura drain.
What do you do against a boss with defenses so high you can't touch it?
It was hard to concentrate. Catalan waded slowly in his direction, and the helplessness of knowing he couldn't help her was unbearable. The effort of keeping his reflexes active began to wear on him and eat at the vitality potion's magic.
If we can't touch you, we at least have to make sure you can't touch us either, Ed decided.
The wraith wasn't that fast. Many times, while playing Ivalice online, he had faced monsters too tough for his level. Those creatures, generally, had little in the way of offense.
That was a video game.
In the real world, battles aren't nicely balanced so a party of 4 to 5 characters can defeat them. But that video game was a magical construct, with real consequences for the real Ivalice. When Ed and his friends had killed Kale Arpidel, Kale really had died. Levy and Alder could attest to that. So all those fights had really happened.
Which meant all its experience points are geared to making it untouchable. Besides the endurance drain in the specters, it has nothing to hit us with.
The world returned to its normal speed, which gave Ed's overheated muscles some measure of respite. Something else was different. His terror had been replaced by frantic adrenaline. His mind raced. He knew what he had to do, but had no idea if he and his friends could manage it.
Everyone listen up! Separate and pull aggro away from Catalan, he exclaimed. Kaga, head left!
He pointed at the shrubbery about 300 feet away from them.
And spiders, right away, opposite him.
Aggro?
Asked Kaga, a hint of desperation in his voice.
Shit.
Ed frantically searched for words.
Distract the monster, get it to attack you instead.
We are to sacrifice ourselves, my lord,
asked one of the spiders. The question sent chills down Ed's spine.
No! As soon as it targets you, the others are to get its attention. Now go!
Ed roared that last part, leaving no space for doubt. To his surprise, the Kaftar and the spiders did as he asked. No, as he had ordered, and ran in opposite directions, shooting strings of web and throwing knives at the wraith. The undead's aura protected it from the web, but Kaga's knives were enchanted to fight monsters. They bypassed the aura, reached the creature's ribs, and did absolutely nothing. But it was enough to get Torst's attention. It chased after Kaga's running silhouette. So far, nothing else had managed to even scratch it. An intelligent attacker would have ignored the Kaftar and focused on its win condition, draining Catalan. That's what Ed would have done in Torst's place. But the wraith wasn't alive. It was smart enough to recognize danger and react to it. So, it diverted its path and headed to Kaga, roaring as it went, its aura melting the snow under it as it moved. It was a small blessing, since Ed could gauge the wraith's aura area of influence by the surrounding steam.
I'm pulling aggro!
Kaga cackled madly as he ran for his life.
I'm pulling aggro!
The fear aura reached him, and the cackle went away.
Wetlands! I'm pulling aggro! Help!
Catalan reached Ed, out of breath, sweat and dirt mixing on her face. There was no time for greetings.
What now?
She asked. Ed clenched his hands into fists. The spiders were still trying to get the wraith's attention, with no success. Without their help, Kaga would get run down, and he was the only one who could get the creature's attention. Besides, that is, Catalin and Ed.
"We get Torst to attack us,"
Ed told her, and ran frantically toward the wraith, trying his best to stay out of the reach of the fear aura.
"And after?"
Catalin said, following him.
"There's a plan past that, right? Because I find it a bit hard to see the good in this strategy, and I'm really trying."
Ed shrugged.
"We keep going until it tires itself out. Or until sunrise."
He drew one of his throwing knives.
"Eldritch Edge!"
That left him with a single spell, which didn't bode well for his plan's long-term success.
"Until sunrise? Fuck!"
Catalin said.
"Yeah, I know."
Since the thief had better aim, Ed handed Catalin the flaming knife, and she threw it without hesitation, straight at the wraith's back. Green fire caught on its tattered shroud. That got its attention, all right. Kleck peeked out of the corner of the small tunnel that led to the Batblin's quarters. 5 caped men were headed his way, led by an elf armed with a long, needle-like blade. The elf gestured at the tunnel, and Kleck went back in a hurry, unsure if he had been seen.
"They're coming our way!"
Kleck told the waiting group of Batblins, about a dozen of them, quivering in the shadowy corners of the quarters. A couple were hidden under a straw bunk. Kleck could see the pile trembling. The horned spider, Tulip, was by a corner of the room. Although her stat sheet proclaimed she was a princess, she was about the size of a normal warrior, and didn't seem eager to fight.
"We need to hide,"
said Drusp, who looked eager to join Tulip in her corner.
"We need to fight,"
Kleck shot back. If the rebels passed them by, they'd soon arrive at Yorjay's forge, where the villagers were hiding. What would happen then?
"Where's Lord Edward? He'd never allow this."
But Lord Edward was nowhere to be seen. Kleck dared not think of the obvious reasons, that he was dead or had abandoned them. Whatever the case, the haunt was in danger.
"Have you gone mad, Kleck?"
asked Drusp. The Cloudmaster held Kleck by the sleeves of his tunic.
"Those men out there are killers! They're armed! With magic! Didn't you feel that explosion a minute ago?"
"Yes, but we have traps of magic of our own! It could have been our explosion!"
Drusp shook him frantically.
"We're Batblins, Kleck! When the dungeons start burning, we die first! By Hogbus, you'll kill us all!"
Maybe it was true. Kleck glanced past Drusp. Most of the Batblins there weren't fighters. They had been manning the brewery and the kitchens when the fighting began. Up until that horned spider came, alerting them of the incoming attack, they'd been perfectly content for the first time in many years. They were safe, well-fed, and warm. Wolves weren't eating their families and loved ones during the night. But now they were finding out the downside of being a dungeon lord's minion.
"We're armed, too,"
Kleck said softly. He nodded toward the iron-tipped spears near the walls. There were enough to arm 5 or 6 of them, and the rest could improvise. Batblins were very good at winging it.
"What would Lord Edward do in my place?"
Kleck thought. He wished his own mind attribute was higher. How was he supposed to figure out the dungeon lord?
"He'd push sub-objectivity rule to the very limit,"
Kleck guessed. But Kleck had no magic to abuse. His father, Verp, had been the shaman. Kleck was but Kleck.
"He'd build something. Perhaps dig a big hole and lure those nasty men inside."
That was useless. Kleck had neither the time nor command of the haunt's drones.
"Enough!"
Drusp screeched.
"You've grown stronger, Kleck, but you ain't stronger than Drusp. And I says we hide."
Drusp pushed him down, trying to drag him away from the entrance. Kleck stood there, paralyzed. He lifted an ear. For a second, Drusp just scowled at him. Then the Cloudmaster realized what he had done. Voices came from outside.
"Did you hear that, Brondon?"
"Yes,"
the elf's voice said.
"Batblins, unless my ears are tricking me. Easy pickings, boys. Prepare to rack up some sweet experience points."
The people out in the hall cheered.
"Evil,"
Kleck thought with utter horror.
"They're evil to the core."
At least the wolves saw Batblins as food. To these people, they were less than that.
"Quick!"
Kleck exclaimed.
"Everyone take arms!"
He pushed Druzb away and barely had time to grab a weapon. Some Batblins, too few, did as he ordered. The rest cowered in fear. One of them tried to run away, but he ran to the tunnel, just as the elf, a thief judging from his sheet, entered the tunnel. Without even looking at the scared Batblin, the elf ran him through with his rapier. Kleck saw the red-tipped point come out of the Batblin's dotted back and nail him to the ground. Deathly wounded, the Batblin's screams came gargled. They filled the room, loud enough to hurt Kleck's ears. Then the elf pressed his boot against the wounded Batblin's belly and withdrew his rapier. The screams reached a terrible high point, then left only the gargling.
"Excellent," said the elf. "5 experience points, just like that."
He looked at the rest of the Batblins. His gaze regarded Kleck with a calculating stare. Kleck knew the thief was trying to figure out how many points he was about to earn for killing them all.
Maybe storming this dungeon wasn't such a bad idea after all.
The rest of the cultists came right behind him.
"Kleck,"
Druzb whispered next to him as the elf and his cultists closed the small distance to them.
"What do we do?"
Kleck's only combat talent was echolocation. What seemed like a long time ago, he had used it to help Lord Edward escape an ambush.
"Because humans can't see in the dark,"
he realized. Without thinking, he reached for the walls and took one of the magical torches there. It had a small magical crystal at the top, very fragile.
"We fight,"
he said, then brought down the torch hard against the ground, where it shattered with an intense flash.
"In the dark, Batblins! Quick!"
The Batblins screamed in confusion. The elf scowled, raised his rapier, and stepped toward Kleck, who had no choice but to raise his short spear and hope for the best.
"Whatever happens, I won't scream," he decided.
Verp hadn't screamed when his time had come. A thick strand of web shot over Kleck's shoulder. The elf saw it coming, cursed, and dodged by jumping back and away. The web struck one of the men behind him instead, gluing his legs to the floor and making him fall flat on his face.
"You heard him,"
Tulip hissed. She was running along the length of the wall, breaking the torches with her mandibles as she went. With every flash, the light dimmed more and more.
"We are creatures of the night, so let's fight in the darkness."
Horned spiders were a Batblin's natural predator. Something about the prospect of fighting alongside one gave the rest of the Batblins more courage than Kleck ever could. While the cultists were busy trying to hit Tulip, the Batblins rushed the few remaining torches. There came a last magical flash, and then the darkness was total. Kleck could only see a hint of a red glint in Tulip's many eyes. The chamber was filled with the confused screams of the cultists. Through his echolocation, Kleck knew they were stumbling blind in the dark, their weapons striking empty air in front of them. He smelled fear.
"Easy pickings, boys," he said,
and charged forward. For an instant, the laboratory trembled as if under an earthquake. Then she felt a soft breeze exiting through the crack in the door. Someone outside cursed and pounded at the reinforced wood with heavy fists.
"Alita's tits,"
Lavey muttered. She cursed herself then, because mentioning Alita's name in the middle of a dark ritual probably wasn't the best idea. She studied the tiny magical feedback sparkling above her. Not nearly enough time. Had she been more skilled, had she earned the correct talents, she had no doubt she could have raised an army of spirits to fight for her. But now she had failed.
"Stand aside!"
someone screamed past the door. The pounding subsided. Before Lavey could react, there came a great impact that bent the doors inward, cracking wood and sending iron nails flying in all directions.
"Oh, dunghill!"
Another impact, close after the other. The doors broke down in an explosion of splinters and noise. Someone kicked the remains and tore them out of the hinges. Lavey crouched behind her table, trying to shield herself from the dust and the sharp shards. This saved her life, because 2 cultists ran inside the room and shot ice bolt runes at her general direction. The bolt smashed a rack filled with vials behind her. The witch heard the glass shatter against the floor.
"Assholes! Crow familiar,"
she croaked, pointing right at the middle of them. Arcane energy throbbed inside her. Not an unpleasant sensation, with the exception of current circumstances. 3 crows made of purple fire swam through the air and headed for the cultists. 1 for each, and the third for whoever was just coming in. A giant of a man, wearing mail armor and dragging an axe dirty with blue ichor and chitinous remains. The two cultists behind the man barely had time to react. They had entered the room blind and were taken by surprise by Levy. One of them wasn't fast enough, and the crow exploded in flames against his face. The other cultist was faster and countered the crow with a firebolt coming from his own spell reserves. Hopefully, he was out of spells after that. The third crow headed straight for the giant. Instead of dodging, the man punched at the purple creature with a fist as big as Levy's head and smashed the crow against the wall. Then he calmly used his cape to put out the flames on his gauntlet.
"Not fair at all,"
said Levy, mouth hanging open. That had been a spell reinforced by her spell penetration talent and her hex focus.
"Life, as a rule of thumb," the man said, "isn't fair."
He strolled into the laboratory while the three cultists behind him helped put out the guy rolling and screaming on the floor. The last cultist covered the giant's flank and rummaged through his own belt, probably looking for a new rune.
"Sadly, life is also fleeting. I won't give you the chance to hurt more of my men. Surrender now, witch, and I'll grant you a quick, merciful death."
Levy considered the offer.
"He's jacked up to the ears in endurance-related talents."
She glanced down at her half-built magical circle. No help was coming that way. Unlike Ed, she wasn't insane enough to roll the dice and hope objectivity was in a forgiving mood.
"Still, I have to wonder, what would he do in my place? I mean, it isn't that difficult to guess. He'd cheat, do something unexpected."
The question was, what? She was surrounded, with only two spell slots left, and the giant didn't look like the kind of man that'd lose the endurance contest against her witch spray. Not against one casting, at least. Certainly not against two.
"Time's up,"
the giant told her sternly.
"I can see you're young. I regret it has to be this way. Any last wish? As long as it's reasonable, I give you my word I'll carry it out."
Somehow, the giant's insane attempt at chivalry pissed her off more than the prospect of dying.
"Well,"
Levy thought,
"at least I know what I wouldn't do in my place."
She wasn't about to stand and get herself killed without objecting. It just wasn't her style. Her hands darted down to the table, and she scooped up all of her new runes. She held about four in each hand. Everyone began shouting at her and taking aim. She felt like cackling madly.
"You want me to bend the rules? Well, how's this for a try? Witch spray!"
And she activated them all at the same time. Chapter 25. Otherworldly Powers. Her enemies were drowned under a barrage of purple orbs. More than 50 of them, saturating the air in every direction. Many struck Levy point blank, but she shrugged them off as if they were caresses. After all, she was a witch, and this was a hex spell. She could have swallowed a rune and triggered it on its way to her stomach, and she wouldn't even have gotten indigestion. The cultists, on the other hand, weren't as lucky. Levy heard, more than she saw, the impacts of the orbs against their bodies, overwhelming their endurance resistance by sheer numbers. Mirrors shattered, racks collapsed, the egg on the experiment table broke and sprayed her in yellow goo. The floor was slick with preservative liquid, and its stingy stench was overwhelming. Smoke engulfed the laboratory as the witch sprays found a target or exploded in magical feedback. Levy coughed, her eyes watering and causing mascara to run down her face like tears of tar. She darted under the table so she could breathe, and saw four cultists convulsing on the floor. But the giant warrior was still standing.
"Witch! You'll pay for this!"
He came toward her like an avalanche and kicked the table away from her. Levy heard the wood splinter and break and disappear into the smoke.
"Where are you? Come here! Face me!"
the giant roared.
"No, thank you,"
Levy thought. She crawled away frantically, ruining her tunic. Bites of pain struck her knees, hands, and elbows when she passed through a field of glass shards. She knew she was leaving a trail of blood behind her.
"Where are you?"
the man roared again, followed by the sound of something big and sturdy breaking like it was nothing. The mental image of her being on the receiving end of one of such strikes was enough to ignore the pain. The smoke was thinning, fast, like it had never been there.
"Witch!"
Footsteps coming behind her.
"Blazing whip!"
A whip made of magical fire materialized in her hand. Levy screamed as she turned and ran for her quarters. She glanced behind her, saw the giant getting nearer. She flicked her whip at him, a long line of fire blazing through the air. The man stopped, extended his hand, and caught the lash with his vambrace. The flaming whip encircled his forearm with a sizzle, and despite the armor, the man winced in pain. Then he smiled, grabbed at the extended line of the whip with his gauntlet, and pulled with all his might. Levy realized what was about to happen, but she was too slow to do anything about it. It was as if the man had tried to pull her skeleton out of her body, starting from her arm. The whip flew away from her hand. Otherwise, she would have been pulled straight into the giant, as numbness spread through her wrist. She stumbled, left long bloody streaks on the floor as she fumbled back up, and saw her whip disappearing as her connection with it ended. There was a scorched circle on the giant's vambrace and, judging from his expression, he wasn't in the mood to be merciful anymore.
"Enough!"
he said.
"Shut up already!"
Levy screamed at him. She ran like a terrified rabbit, but instead of heading to her quarters, where she'd be trapped, she headed for the exit which the man had left unguarded.
"No! This ends now!"
he bellowed behind her. She heard him attempt a lunge, slip on the floor, and crash against one of her shelves. She ran down the tunnel, too scared to think of a plan. Maybe she'd find someone, or reach the exit and hide in the forest. She passed by the barely recognizable corpses of some spider warriors, blue blood and gray insides strewn all over the tunnel.
"This won't happen to me,"
she told herself.
"It won't. It won't."
But she could hear the giant already exiting the laboratory. She knew he was faster than she was. She had seen him sprint. For the first time in her life, she wished she had had more time to train under Kes.
"If I make it through tonight, I'll become your best student, Kes. I promise."
Something to her left claimed her attention. She almost passed it by in her panic. It was a wide archway carved into the rock, with two reinforced iron doors at the end, and a plank holding them closed. There was a field of spiky iron strings strewn between the doors and Levy, with a sign hanging by the entrance. She glanced behind her shoulder. The giant was already halfway to her and gaining. She knew the best path through the iron strings. Ed called them barbed wire. They weren't designed to keep things from coming inside, but from coming out.
"I've gone insane,"
Levy realized. She laughed, tears still falling down her face. Her nose caught the faint scent of manure and sulfur past the doors. She laughed harder, and with all her strength, lifted the plank away and stepped inside. Rollum reached the passageway just as the door closed. He stared at the barbed wire, read the sign hanging above the door. With a smirk and a roll of his eyes, he reached for the door, his armor protecting him from the wire. He closed the door behind him, hard, making the sign rattle against the door. "Keep out," the sign read. "We're fucking warning you." There was a face in front of him. Alder groaned. His eyes stung, his entire body hurt, and he was sure that his hair was smoldering. He blinked, forcing his stunned brain to focus. The face belonged to Kes. The mercenary looked like hell. She was ashen gray, covered in bruises, and she had a nasty gash in her forehead gushing blood. Her hazelnut eyes, though, were focused on Alder.
"Thank the gods,"
she muttered.
"I thought you broke your neck. You fell on your head."
Alder passed a hand over his temple and found blood.
"Ouch."
"You tell me." "Ah."
She tried to laugh, then groaned.
"I knew we should have measured that damn dust trap better. Almost killed us."
"At least you killed him, right?"
Alder asked, thinking of Nikolai. Kes threw a worried glance behind her, at the misshapen figures that lay in the hall.
I'm not sure, Alder. That man, he isn't fully human. Somehow I think he's using the mind brood to heal himself.
What? No way.
Alder fixed his gaze on the unmoving shape that was Nikolai. His cape was torn to shreds, and a broken, badly burnt arm covered his face. He was missing several fingers as well as chunks of flesh.
No way. A mind brood? So he had his brain eaten on purpose? Are you sure, Kiss?
Yes, I know what I saw.
She held her left hand and showed Alder her missing fingers.
It's his arm, you know. It bit me.
As if Nikolai could hear them, the man stirred and gave a faint groan. His broken arm began to shift and melt, oozing pus through the burns and shedding scabbing all over.
Wetlands!
Alder forced himself to stand and was almost overpowered by an instant of dizziness. With his back against the wall, he took deep breaths until he recovered. Nikolai's wounds were closing, clear as day, some faster than the others, and the man seemed to be in agonizing pain.
Kiss, we need to hide.
She was in no condition to fight him, and Alder wasn't a warrior. Kes groaned, and she lifted her arm from her belly to reveal a long, ugly wound that bled slowly all over her waist and legs.
I'm not going anywhere far,
she said, then pointed at an empty flask lying next to her.
But I can hold on, I think. You have to reach Ed, Alder. He needs those weapons.
She nodded at the tray with the potions and the blessed knives, which Alder had forgotten. Most of the potions were broken, their contents wetting the stone floor, but the knives and the smoke bombs were thankfully intact.
I can't leave you here,
Alder told her,
and there's no way I'm getting past him.
Behind Kes, Nikolai was up on his knees, staring at the broken visage of one of his cultists. He passed an inhuman hand over the face of the fallen cultist and closed her eyes. Then he fixated his broken face on Alder and Kes.
You have to,
Kes told him.
If Ed doesn't come back in time, Nikolai will reach the seat. Then we'll have to hide in a dead dungeon while he kills us at his leisure.
Nikolai's arm coiled around him like a serpent. It had far more fangs and pointed teeth than any arm had a right to have.
No way. I'm not a warrior like you, Kes. I'm a bard,
Alder said with desperation.
Look at what he did to you. Can we get a spider to do it? Or a drone?
He glanced around, hopefully.
Alder,
Kes said softly.
There's no one else. It has to be you.
She forced herself up to one knee, almost like a knight facing her king.
You don't have to be a warrior. You don't even have to fight him. Just get past him. Be a bard, Alder. That's all I'm asking.
Last time that Alder had seen one of his friends hurting this much, it had been during the invasion of Kael's dungeon. He had been as useless during that time as he was being tonight.
Will you be all right?
He asked. He was scared out of his wits. Had the heroes in the bardic songs felt as scared as he was now, while they were doing the deeds that earned them their fame?
No way,
he told himself.
No way. Heroes are never scared.
But maybe Kes was right. Maybe a terrified bard was all they needed. Because after all, a bard was always near one hero or another. You never knew when one would show up. Kes nodded and managed to stand. She scavenged one of the vitality potions for herself, then handed Alder the tray.
Good luck, Alder.
The bard took a deep breath and made an effort not to think of the possibility of being devoured alive by an arm with teeth in the next few seconds. Lancel and Poira. Dead. Nikolai began to feel like 20 deaths wouldn't be good enough to punish Dungeon Lord Edward Wright.
I'll have to take everything from him. He'll have to watch as his loved ones beg for death. I'll force him to wield the sword himself.
He was going mad with physical pain, and he knew it. The dead monster inside his body was screeching silently at him, drowning him in animal fury and hunger.
Hurt. I'm hurt. Food. I need food. I need to hide and feed until I'm recovered. Hurt. No.
He pushed the monster's instincts down below, where they belonged.
You're dead. I'm in control.
The Lotian had been very clear, and Nikolai had made damn sure he wasn't lying. The creature was dead, and whatever instinct was left was merely a vestigial afterthought, not entirely unlike a zombie born out of necromantic residue. He stood, leaving the broken corpses of Lancel and Poira behind. He'd have to mourn them later. He stumbled his way toward the avian woman, who was staring at him defiantly.
Good, Nikolai whispered. Good. That means I can still break you some more.
His arm slithered across the floor with every step. It was hungry, eager to taste blood.
First, I'll take your hands. Then, I'll take your feet.
He flashed her an unhappy smile. No pain was enough. No pain would ever be enough. But he'd take whatever he could get. A glint of eldritch green came somewhere to his left side. With speed forged by years of bitter fighting, Nikolai turned the maw of his hand, snapping at the air.
First, you'll have to get through me, said Edward Wright,
his evil eye blazing with terrible anger past the green hooded cape that covered half his face in shadows.
You!
Nikolai roared.
How? He was supposed to be out there, fighting Torst.
The dungeon lord was armed to the teeth, a silver longsword in one hand and, in the other, a short sword with a black steel blade, the edge glinting red. He was clad in full plate armor of Lotian design, the breastplate engraved with depictions of ancient dungeon lords crushing their enemies. His cape shone with powerful enchantments sewn at the seams by silver thread. His ancient lord aura was so strong that the surrounding air glimmered as if near a bonfire.
That's right, Wright said. Me.
He raised his sword in challenge, tip aimed at Nikolai's neck.
You've come into my house, you fool of a man, fully aware of the consequences. You have killed my minions and inconvenienced me. Under the ancient laws of the lordship, I'm free to crush you and use your experience points as I desire. There will be no mercy.
His evil eye shone brighter than ever.
I am Lord Edward Wright of the Haunt, called Lord Wraith by his minions. I command terrible, otherworldly powers. If you have any last words, you should speak now.
No way, Nikolai thought.
Despite himself, he was scared.
Did I underestimate him somehow?
The man standing in front of him was far more powerful than the one he had met a month ago. Could someone really change that much during that time span?
Or has he been tricking me since the beginning?
The realization felt as if someone had dunked his head under freezing water.
He hid most of his stats, and let me believe we could beat his dungeon.
Lord Wraith, he had called himself. Could it really be a coincidence that he had stumbled upon Nikolai's ritual when his rebels were raising an actual wraith?
He's mocked me since the beginning.
Past the fear came the hatred. This time, he had neither the strength nor the desire to resist the impulse of the dead monster. He gave in.
Wright must pay. You have no idea what you're dealing with, Dungeon Lord, he said.
His arm whipped across Wright's neck in a flash of motion. The Dungeon Lord made no attempt at dodging, and Nikolai knew he had struck a mortal blow. He expected to be treated to the sight of Edward drowning in a pool of his own blood. Instead, his arm sliced through thin air instead of flesh and bone, and Edward Wright vanished. For a second, Nikolai could only stare, stunned, at the empty spot where the Dungeon Lord had been.
What?
It seems to me, said a meek and quiet voice somewhere behind him, that neither did you.
Nikolai turned in time to see a young man with straw-blonde hair reach the exit tunnel. He was carrying a small tray in his hands.
Nimble feet!
The young man said, then dashed away with astonishing speed before Nikolai could react.
What?
Nikolai asked aloud. The avian mercenary had disappeared too at some point, the only evidence of her presence being a trail of bloodied footsteps.
An illusion,
the rebel realized then. His plan hadn't failed. Edward Wright was still dealing with Torst. The mirage in front of him had merely been a minor illusion, the last maddened attempt of a bard to save his own hide.
Only an illusion. It's just that kind of day.
Chuckling to himself, he passed over the corpses of Lancel and Poira and followed the avian mercenary's footsteps. An instinctual part of him knew that he was getting closer and closer to the dungeon's seat. The wraith towered above Ed and Catelyn, its skull bright with green rage.
You can't run away from me forever, my daughter. Come, join me. Cold can be comforting, too.
It swooped down in a blur of speed, screeching as it went. Overwhelming fear breached into Ed's mind, drowning his reason. He tried to fight it, but it was like standing in the path of a train and trying to slow it down with only his bare hands. He turned and ran toward the trees, his throat burning painfully with each inhalation. At some point, he had dropped his sword. Not like it was any use against the wraith. The fear receded. Now Ed was furious.
Torst's toying with my mind.
The very idea of having that dead thing affecting his brain somehow made him tremble with rage. He turned back. Catelyn was running for her life. She had had the presence of mind to head in the opposite direction. Behind her, Kaga was doing his best to earn the wraith's attention, but he was running out of knives, and he couldn't get close enough to the wraith without coming into the effect of the fear aura. Catelyn tried to run to the safety of the trees in her panic. Ed knew it was a mistake. The wraith cared nothing for obstacles, and their only hope was to keep it in the clearing, where they could see it coming. When the last dregs of the vitality potion dried out, Ed downed his agility potion.
Enough,
he thought. He sprinted to Kaga, pumping his legs as fast as he could, moving faster than ever before. He needed all the speed he could spare. The spiders followed a line parallel to him and Catelyn, still trying to put as much distance between each other as they could, per Ed's orders. But they couldn't get the wraith's attention if they couldn't hurt it.
Kaga, close the distance!
Ed told the Kaftar when they were close enough. He activated his Ancient Lord aura. Without the vitality potion's boost to his endurance, he could feel the strain on his body like he was being cooked alive by invisible coals.
On it!
Said the Kaftar. Then he dashed toward the undead monster. Catelyn was running out of breath, and the wraith was as fast as ever.
Why do you resist, Catelyn?
Torst asked.
Join me, darling, and all your woes will go away.
Shut up!
Catelyn panted.
Shut up already!
She threw a smoke bomb at the wraith. A dark cloud exploded in midair, big enough to engulf the creature. Before Catelyn could regain her lost speed, Torst flew out, straight at her, not even slowing for an instant.
It doesn't need eyes to see her, Edward realized.
He was doing his best to stay near Kaga so his aura could protect the Kaftar from the magical fear.
It's tracking her some other way.
If only Levi were here, maybe she could have found a way to blind Torst.
But she isn't. Focus, Ed. One mistake and Catelyn's going to die. And then everyone else would follow her.
Oi! Ugly!
Kaga called after the wraith.
I'm talking to you!
He threw his last knife, and this time he was close enough to the wraith that his hand blistered as he extended it.
Ah!
Ed could see Kaga's endurance drain by one rank. The knife struck the creature's skull. The hit rang hollow, but Ed was sure it had at least nicked the bone.
You dare?
The monster bellowed, stopping in its tracks.
You dare strike at me? Get in the way of my reunion with my daughter?
Torst changed course, faster than Ed had anticipated.
Come at me!
Kaga howled. He was wielding his fang daggers in each hand, and his tongue flapped madly in the wind.
I'm ready! Come at me! My cackle will be proud of me tonight!
Ed realized that the Kaftar was about to try to kill the wraith before it could drain his endurance. But Ed had seen the wraith fight in close combat before, against Nikolai in the catacombs. Nikolai's incredible regeneration had allowed him to tank the drain for a while, but the wraith had broken his body like it was nothing, throwing him around over and over again. Kaga was going to die. Ed desperately grabbed the last vial in his belt and held it firmly in his right hand. His chest was filled with an overwhelming sensation of impending doom.
This either works or kills me instantly. I'm so fucking sorry,
Ed thought, as he turned off his ancient lord aura. Kaga's brave expression was instantly replaced by one of sheer, absolute terror. As his fur began to smoke and his skin to blister, the Kaftar dropped his daggers and ran, frothing at the mouth, eyes unfocused. The wraith howled after him, fast like the wind, drinking Kaga's endurance with each passing second. Then, Ed activated his improved reflexes and jumped in the wraith's path. The boost to his agility gave him a few extra inches of height, allowing him, for an instant, to be face to face with the incoming undead. Fear overwhelmed him instantly. But he had nowhere to run. Not while in midair. When a terrified man, or animal, has nowhere to run, the only possible response is to try to defend himself however he can. Ed's skin was slowly blistering and breaking as if it were but wet paper, and there was a terrible heat coming from his right hand. He threw the vial at the wraith without even realizing he was doing so. He saw the crystal vial trace an arc to the wraith, saw its transparent surface crack. Almost gracefully, more and more under the pressure of the undead's aura, until the glass exploded in 1,000 shards, showering Torst's skull in a rain of holy water. The skull was enveloped in a blinding white fire. Torst screamed an ear-piercing shriek and collapsed down in slow motion as Ed's fear vanished. Ed hit the ground, hard enough to drain the air from his lungs and make his mouth taste blood. At this point in his career as a dungeon lord, though, he was getting used to pain. He rolled away, darted up, and forced the daze in his vision to clear itself. Torst was standing up, stunned, his skull blackened and heavy with ash. The green pinpricks of light that were his eyes looked confused and had dimmed. Ed not only wasn't in pain anymore, his endurance wasn't being drained either.
No!
The wraith hollered.
No! What have you done to me?
It was clear from the animal-like way its spine bent that it hadn't used its legs in a long time. It dug its fingertips into the ground, arms bent like a spider's legs. Then it crawled at Ed with dizzying speed, its skeletal hands throwing fistfuls of dirt behind it as it went.
Excellent, thought Ed. I have the wraith right where I want it.
He attempted a dodge to the right using his improved agility, but the effort of using all his talents with his drained endurance had taken a toll on him. He fell on one knee, and an instant later there was a fist like a ton of bricks smashing against his chest. His feet left the ground, and the world spun around him, and then all faded to black. 1 second later, he groaned and stirred blindly. He forced his green hood away from his eyes. The grass next to his mouth was marred with blood. No one had ever punched him as hard as that in his entire life. He was sure that his chest had caved in over his lungs. He couldn't breathe. He was going to asphyxiate, or drown in his own blood, whatever happened first.
Defensive talents, he thought in a daze. Point taken, Kess.
He patted his chest. It was still in its usual shape. The leather armor had probably saved his life, and only because of his pledge of armor.
If I live through this, I'm wearing the heaviest armor I can stand, and I'm never taking it off.
Slowly, his mind recovered. He wondered why the wraith hadn't finished the job. He shook his head to clear it. His ears were ringing, and all sounds came distant and distorted. Shapes danced about 10 strides away from him. No. It was a fight, a brutal one. Catalin had a fanged dagger in her hand, Kaga had another, and they were coming at the wraith's flanks like a pair of wolves maddened with hunger. Ed's spider warriors encircled the fight, searching for an opening. Catalin had tears in her eyes, and she was screaming something that sounded suspiciously like sneak attack every time Torst faced Kaga.
She must have bought the talent after I got Torst's attention, Ed thought.
In the end, she hated the wraith enough to go against her own build. Torst was on the defensive, its legs heavy with spiderweb strands slowing its movements. Kaga and Catalin's quick fighting styles were making short work of the creature. because it couldn't land a single hit. Catelyn dodged under its constant, terrible swipes, not even bothering to add distance between herself and her undead father. Kaga was right there then, his dagger leaving long gashes and cuts in the undead's bones. Its shroud was burnt and torn to shreds, no longer anything more than a dirty rag. The wraith's rib cage was exposed, and half the ribs were broken and cracked.
Catelyn, stop!
The wraith roared.
You're hurting your father!
Catelyn's dagger slipped into the wraith's arm and she forced the wraith down, spine bent all the way to the ground. At the same time, the three spiders came down on Torst as if they were one, their combined weight enough to make it lose balance and keel over, still screeching nonsense about Catelyn's destiny. The spider's mandibles cracked against bones over and over, sending gray shards flying in all directions.
At last!
Exclaimed one of the warriors as it tore off Torst's left hand and spat it out.
Floral's cluster brings its true strength to bear!
The wraith tried to shake them off, but it was unbalanced. Kaga fell over it in a flurry of strikes, and Catelyn drove her own dagger into the wraith's empty eye socket. Torst screamed in agony. The fanged dagger lodged firmly inside his cracked skull. Then his only remaining hand grabbed onto the nearest spider. The movement caught the critter unaware. Ed couldn't help but watch in horror as Torst, still screaming, drove the jagged end of its arm into the spider's underbelly, showering everyone with blue blood and goo. And with a single, terrible motion and a sickening tearing of meat and tendon, ripped the spider's lower abdomen away from the rest of her body. The abdomen went flying in an arc across the air, its legs still flailing.
No!
Ed heard himself screaming.
Everyone get away!
It seemed to go wrong all at once. The spiderweb in Torst's feet began to sizzle and smoke, and the air around the undead creature regained a faint glimmer as its aura slowly restored itself. In one fluid motion, the wraith smashed Kaga across the chest and sent the Kaftar rolling away in a heap. Kaga whimpered and tried to stand, but his strength failed him. One arm was bent unnaturally.
Yes!
Torst's laughter came distant and impossibly cold.
Yes, this is destiny, Catelyn. You can't stand in the way of your father. Now watch as your friends suffer for your own sins.
The spider warriors tried to push the wraith down again, but this time it was ready for their charge. It reached with its hand and tore one spider's front legs out like a kid playing with a frail branch. Roaring with hatred, Torst then drove the torn legs straight into the other spider's eye.
No!
Catelyn roared. She jumped in front of Torst, drawing its attention away from the two remaining spiders.
You're dead, you stubborn asshole!
She tried to ram her own dagger into Torst's only remaining socket, but the wraith parried the dagger with its stump. Ed could see Catelyn's eyes widen with supernatural fear. When the aura returned, it almost made a sound quite like the humming of the wraith specters.
I'm too far away from her,
Ed realized with dawning panic. He forced himself to stand. His knees were wobbly, and his entire body shook uncontrollably. Catelyn turned to run, but one skeletal hand caught her by the neck and lifted her without any apparent effort. The wraith's feet hovered above the ground, above the three spider warriors, two of them dead or dying, and above Kaga's crumpled figure.
Can't you see, dear daughter?
The wraith asked her as she struggled feverishly under his grip.
This is the dark god Murmur's will. A long time ago, a pact was made between him and me. A pact of survival.
Very slowly at first, Catelyn's endurance lost a single rank.
Of life beyond death, indeed. In exchange for the pitiful lives of a bunch of alien nobility, he assured me that I'd be reborn one day with powers beyond the comprehension of mortals. I only needed one thing to make my transformation complete. The living blood of my most beloved family member. And you are the last one alive, aren't you, Cat? What was it that I liked to tell you?
Ed could swear he heard the joy in that dead voice.
We're all we have left, my dear. It's us against the world. Do you see, Catelyn? Do you see? It was destiny all along.
Another endurance rank lost. Ed stumbled his way to the floating pair. Catelyn wasn't fighting back anymore. Her face was gaining a shade of purple, and her parted lips were dried and cracking.
I still have one spell left.
Ed's only hope was to reach Kaga's dagger and activate his Eldritch Edge. The fact that he was completely drained of stamina made no difference in his plan. Either he'd do it, or she would die. And he wasn't about to stand and watch it happen.
So I asked Murmur to protect you until the time came when I was to be resurrected. The Hungry One can be generous when he wants to,
Torst went on, although it seemed to Ed that Catelyn wasn't in any shape to listen.
He agreed happily, only asking another final murder, that of Duke Finnell of Galtier, who was already near the Heligians. It wasn't even hard to bypass the Duke's defenses, empowered as I was with Murmur's incredible magic. And now, his part of the deal is fulfilled. My legend begins, and it will never end, as long as the stars burn in the sky.
Stupid!
To Ed's surprise, Catelyn stirred in Torst's grasp. She gave a wet cough and gasped for air.
Stupid! Can't you see how Murmur played you?
She's right. How could Torst, back when he was alive, have been so blind? Murmur had used him to kickstart the war between Steravos and Haligies. Realization after realization followed like a domino effect. The war with Steravos had weakened Haligies and forced it to issue a ceasefire with Lotia for a couple of years, which was enough for the Lotian dungeon lords to rebuild their strength. What had Heron told Ed when the boatman threw him into those catacombs to save Catelyn?
Murmur owes her father a personal favor. The Dark One promised to keep her safe. Isn't that endearing? The love a father can have for his daughter.
He fucking knew this would happen, Ed whispered.
The humming of the necromantic emanations from the Wraith almost sounded like a distant laughter. Distant and cold. And mocking. You're all tools, the laughter seemed to say. Monkeys dancing in the palms of uncaring gods. And among those, I am the most uncaring of them all.
Silly girl.
The Wraith laughed and laughed as her endurance went down more and more.
Murmur always fulfills his promises. Everyone knows it. And now, you'll join me in the ranks of his lieutenants. In truth.
The Wraith's single, remaining green eye shone with triumph.
You should thank me.
I can't reach her in time,
Ed realized. He could count her remaining endurance ranks on one hand. Blood was running like tears from her eyes, ears, and nose. Torst's aura was more powerful than ever. Ed could already feel the waves of fear reaching his chest. He wouldn't make the jump. It was physically impossible.
I'm about to watch her die.
No!
A familiar voice came from behind Ed. It was Alder, out of breath, covered in sweat, arms scratched to all hell by his sprint through the forest. There was a tray filled with broken potions at his feet, and he was clutching a small, smoking sphere in one hand.
She should thank me!
He threw the sphere with all his might at the floating Wraith, who hadn't even acknowledged the bard's presence. The sphere exploded well before reaching its target, but the cloud of smoke that followed engulfed Catelyn and the Wraith immediately. Ed could see specks of silver flashing here and there inside the cloud. He realized it was one of Yorche's altered smoke bombs.
Infused with silver.
Sparks of necromantic feedback surged through the cloud like snakes lurking under the surface of a lake. The constant throbbing of the undead became an ear-splitting screech. Ed saw the figures of Catelyn and Torst plummet to the ground. Catelyn held Kaga's dagger, and she drove it